Hey, good morning. You are listening to Breakfast Bites, and I am Felicia King. And today is a super special day because I'm not the only king on the show.
I didn't even think of that. Oh, my goodness.
With me here today, I have Gina King. She is from Ovation Point, and she provides global management services from risk management to program management. Now, that's what she wanted me to tell you, but I'll tell you what I think. I think Gina is one of the top CISOs in the country, and she kind of owns that whole like Eastern Michigan market, but also does lots of international service as well, and is one of the CISOs in the country that I actually have a lot of respect for. So them's are some high words. And
cheers.
All right. So we wanted to get together and have a discussion about a couple kind of hot items. And those hot items had to do with, you know, oftentimes organizational management is struggling with trying to figure out a metric, like how much should we be spending on IT? And then there's a whole lot of debate about that. So we want to talk about that. And then, you know, of course, company managers also want to find out how they're doing against their peers. And we're not going to cover that right now. But I think this whole topic of how much are we spending on IT, that question and the answers that go with that question are right in the same ballpark as that entire question of, you know, how are they stacking up against their peers? Now, then the other question we're going to talk about here is, when are we done with IT security investment? Okay, because that's another hot thing. And both of these questions and the answers that go with them are applicable to any sort of executive management leadership out there, business owners, business decision makers. They're trying to grab a hold of something that they can understand rather than, you know, the technical stuff that they think is just, you know, Greek, right? Okay, so let's get started on the topic of what should companies be paying in total for IS and IT expenditures and what happens when they underinvest. So to me, if they're not doing this properly, if they don't have the right paradigm around that, then they're always looking at, oh, we have to cut costs. Yeah. And then they typically are underinvesting. So what do you think?
I agree completely, especially when they think IT is all cost, when at the point of purchase, there were some other considerations that they totally overlooked. So the price of whatever they bought for IT or IS was more in the beginning, and they kicked that can down the road. And so when those things come up, whether it's, you know, upgrading software or putting more people in place to support the thing, all the things that they overlooked in the beginning, is really a delayed cost. It's not that they need to cut the cost of IT. There was an oversight often.
Yeah, you know, you bring up an excellent point about procurement. If you do procurement well, and I think this is, you know, it's one of my hot buttons. I think it's probably one of your hot buttons too. And I think it's our hot button because we've seen the clarity of how crucial quality procurement processes are. If you procure properly and you do the right vendor risk management, vetting of a solution, you put the right things in your contracts with your vendors, you just avoid a whole mess. So give us your thoughts on that.
Oh, absolutely. And then being able to work with the vendors who can not only help you buy what you need today, but that can help see through your vision, because it may be great for the first 90 days. You know, maybe you got something they said, oh, this is free. But then after that 90 days, here come all those costs. You need to be able to work with vendors and suppliers that can help you see that end-to-end strategy of how you're going to manage the cost of whatever it is that you're buying. And one day we need to talk about whenever there's mystery in whatever you're buying, there's likely some hidden costs there. That could be a whole show by itself.
Well, yeah, now let's tangent on that a tidbit, because sometimes there is going to be mystery, I think, only because somebody is at, like a business decision maker is asking an IT service provider to boil the ocean. But you can't. You can't boil the ocean. And actually, this kind of, let me pivot a little bit into our second question, because one of the things that I've seen frequently is where they're paralyzed in their analysis and saying, you know, I need you to give me this big assessment. and we have to know everything about everything, and we need to know exactly how much everything is going to cost before we can even start. Okay, I can tell you that I've worked with clients, like the same client for 18 years, and I am still discovering stupidness in their environment. Okay, like it is absolutely impossible to know everything about everything. And anybody who ever tells you that they can come up with an air quote comprehensive assessment, I think they're just misleading you, right? So rather than being paralyzed and saying, hey, I don't want to spend any money on anything until I know how much all of this is going to cost, because I'm just too concerned about, I don't feel like I can manage the risk of this if I don't know about everything. So I try to direct them away from that. And I take this approach of like, let's do a small assessment. Let's just look at stuff for a couple hours. You know, if I can find $100,000 worth of stuff that needs to be fixed in 2 hours with my eyeballs, do I really need to look any further?
And you know what? You're making a great point there, because you're not going to know everything. Absolutely. And the fact that they want to know everything and they're asking you to do it means they've already missed the point of knowing everything. That's in the past. But they can at least institute some touch points where we need to do an additional assessment and understand our costs. Let's say for the next 90 days or the next 6 months. And then that's something you can estimate. You can estimate at the beginning of the year and say, here are the touch points. And I estimate there's going to be an additional 30% spend or an additional 20%, whatever those things are. But to not do it at all, you're right, just asking for disaster. Yeah,
exactly. Right. And or to say that somehow, you know, somebody has to give you a comprehensive assessment before you can start to do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I've talked
sometimes in their change process, you find the way they do things uncovers more things that you did not know. And it's just like,
oh yeah.
Junk garbage.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. That's almost like a weekly occurrence, in fact. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly why I think that every organization either needs to have a CISO or they need to have a VCISO. But that person who's doing that function needs to be adequately technical, but they also need to be a bit of a politician.
Absolutely.
To be able to, you know, shepherd that change through the organization. I find all the time where I'm able to have conversations where I sit with, you know, executive management, sometimes the managers that report to them, and talk about those business processes. And I can say calmly, you know, that's not ideal. Let's talk about a better way about doing it. And you know, the way that you guys are doing it now, it introduced this type of risk into your organization. So, you know, and it's really not that big of a deal if we do it a better way. You know, the better way is less expensive or whatever it is. And I can articulate those things. And the interesting thing, and I think you've brought this up before, is that many times the things that I'm advocating are things that the IT department tried to get
all the time
implemented in the environment years prior.
Yes.
But too often internal IT lacks that ability to articulate things couched in the risk management language.
I think so. And I think the other thing is being willing to present the risk and recognize that they may just say, we're going to ignore that risk, and being able to take that walk with them. So when it finally does fall over the cliff, you have the expertise to say, I'm not going to tell you I told you so, but here are some strategies we can do to kind of recover. Where I think sometimes with IT, because I used to be in IT, it's their way or no way. And instead of being like that, it's kind of like, you can do whatever you want if you're willing to take on these risks.
Right.
That's a whole different conversation.
It is. Right. Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know what, that's a maturity thing. That is a maturity thing, right? Because oftentimes IT needs to be right because they need to like prove themselves to somebody. You and I, we don't need to be right. We've already proven ourselves, you know, 100,000 times over.
And I can be wrong. I don't have a problem with being wrong. It's kind of like, wow, I never thought that would work. That's amazing. Like that would have never, like that has never worked for me, but somehow you were able to pull it off like that, like great job. But I think sometimes in IT, because I used to be in IT, when they're focused only on technology, all their answers are technical.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have a really funny story for you on that. 2 weeks ago, I was in an enterprise wireless certification training program for 2 days with, 30 guys, right? Like 30 guys and me. And, so in part of this class, one of the attendees, he was talking about a little project he was doing. And this whole debate he was having with everybody else in the room, other than me, because I just thought it was a silly debate, was how many wireless access points for this context. And I kind of let them go on for a while and banty about. And I just said to them, I'm like, guys, that's it. Let's pump the brakes here because you're all wrong. I said, no, here's why you're all wrong. You're all wrong because all you're doing is sitting here thinking about that this is a technical problem. You have to first start with economics. And if you go to the client and say, well, you're trying to do it with 2 wireless access points when we really should just be doing it with 4 wireless access points, here's the price difference. And guess what? If we get 4 wireless access points, you've spent money on equipment, but now you're going to spend less money on labor because we're going to have less technical issues, right? You're going to have less support issues. It's going to be a more reliable solution. And now we can kind of with more certainty tell you what the cost of the solution is. Versus if we're trying to get it done with 2 wireless access points, well, we may have these issues and we may have to waste a bunch of time troubleshooting things. It's like, no, this is not a technical problem. This is an economics problem. Exactly. And after I said that, they were like, oh yeah, she's right.
Yeah. I did a survey. What made me pivot strongly into cyber is I did a survey, and I want to say it was more than 200 businesses. And my question was, in a scenario where you need to do something regarding cybersecurity in your environment, what's your number one blocker? And I gave them like 5 reasons, and I was sure it was going to be money. Money was the last reason. Number one was, we don't know what to do. We see other companies doing things. But as a small business, I sell flowers. I don't know what I specifically need to do. And then number two was, even if I knew what to do, so that's number one, even if I knew what to do, where do I go to get help? I see these huge companies. I could never afford those organizations. Where could I go to get help? And then number three was, if I knew what to do and I got help, how do I sustain it? Because I can't compete in the marketplace for the type of talent. And I was just like, I was guessing that it was money. It was not money. It was just having the guidance. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, look, I can help with that. I can help with that. So right. I think what you're talking about is right. Sometimes we think that it's going to be a money issue when it's not. It's just that we need to do a better job of helping people understand that they don't need to be an expert to get help. Because right. Once we have a discussion, we can figure it out. But if they're sitting there like, well, I don't know this and I don't know this and I don't know this, it kind of makes it difficult.
Well, I think it's just so hard for a business decision maker these days. I mean, it seems like every prospect I talk to, they're telling me some sort of a nightmare story about how they spent $20,000 for an assessment and then now they don't know what to do. Oh yeah. Or the most recent one I talked to was, we've had 10 prior MSPs and I did a free audit for them of their network layer security appliance and is the best word in polite company that I would use to describe the configuration in the thing. And, so at the end of the day here, what do we got? We have 10 other IT companies have been involved with this business. And out of those 10, not a one of them could do the most basic fundamental thing that I could have resolved in an hour, And so this leaves such a bad taste in a business decision maker's mouth. And another one I talked to, they were like, we spent $20,000 on an audit and now we don't know what to do. And we decided to not go forward with that company because we had such a bad experience and they've had other, bad experiences in the past, So I think step one is getting an idea paradigm around how much should we be spending on IT. And then, what is the paradigm about that IT spending? And then maybe a third question is, how do we find help? So let's circle back to question number one. I've personally experienced looking at the spend of our own clients who are doing well and who are not doing well. And I've also talked to a lot of other CISOs and other, a lot of other IT pros. And the general consensus has been 10% of revenue is your minimum, 15% is better.
Yes.
And, you know, the higher your revenue, the closer you can get to 10%. But if you're like a $1 million or a $2 million business, you should be spending 15% of revenue. What are your observations?
Oh, my goodness. That's so interesting, because I feel like if you attach your IT spend to how much money you're making, you're looking at it the wrong way. I think it's about supplying a unique, powerful, and consistent experience to your clients. And I think it should be based on what you're trying to provide to your clients. And the reason I feel that's because that's the core of your business. If you're looking at IT for IT's sake, you could be spending $1 million on IT, but if your client experience is in the garbage, you're about to close your doors, Walmart. You're about to close your doors. Like, we all know, like, those companies who feel like they have to be so rigid in how they provide experience to their clients, at some point, someone who understands technology will sweep those people right away from you. And so I think it's more about aligning with the experience that you need your clients to have, because at that point, the spend could be a lot less. Because if you split the technology you need for corporate, let's say, and then the technology you need for your client, it could be the case that your technology spend goes down.
So here's an interesting question then. So I know you're aware of the FTC and IRS regulations for tax preparers in the United States. And let's assume that business owners start to get savvy and they start going to the tax preparers and they ask, hey, give us your certification statement that shows that your business is fully compliant with the IRS and FTC regulations, because otherwise we don't really believe that you can keep our tax records secure.
I agree. How you do one thing is how you do everything.
Right.
So if your house is dirty, you know what? I like you and everything, but I'm not going to eat there. I have nothing else to go on. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. So that's a phenomenal example of how a person who owns a tax preparation firm or a CPA firm, or they do bookkeeping or payroll, whatever it is that they do, that type of a service, they need to be thinking first, right? Because that is the prerequisite to them having revenue. What do we need to do to have in place so that we can have the certification statements that we can give to customers and prospective customers so we can retain the customers we have and we can go get more prospective customers? Furthermore, we can compete against our competitors successfully because we can say, hey, we're doing this really well. And those other people, they don't have that certification statement. Okay. So now if that means you have to raise your prices to have this additional IT spend in order to be compliant, in order to have appropriate levels of information security risk management, then I personally would rather spend more money with a company who was paying attention to those things than a company that's $200 a year less.
So this might sound a little harsh, but who wants clients that are making deals in the alley? It's just a matter of time before you end up being the part of the exchange of what they're exchanging in the alley. Like, you know, hey, but if we go in the alley, we can trade these rocks and this thing and we can do this. Don't do it. Do what you need to do. Do it right and finish it. Because the clients you're looking for, they want things to be done right. Like, their business depends on it.
Right.
Business depends on it. So if you want to be better in business, if you feel like your business is struggling, number one, look to what your clients need, get your house in order, and be the type of company your clients want. That improves your business overall.
Mm-hmm.
Your client base, because they're looking. They know how to look. They know how to check. They know how to do references. They're definitely checking. And that's why you're getting those bargain basement people wanting coupon prices, is because right. They've done the research and they know that you'll cut corners. It's just a matter of time before it blows up on you.
Yeah. And then it's, you just lost your whole business.
Exactly.
And you know, because I mean, certainly if the IRS or the FTC come in and say, well, you're not compliant with being a tax preparer anymore, Forget that. That entire revenue stream is shut down. Bye-bye.
Yep. And anything even closely related is done. And the same thing goes with insurance. Think about your client, what they need.
Right. Well, okay. So speaking of that, now I have to, you know, you walked me into another one of my hot buttons of all time, which is breach of contract. Okay. So if you have a contract with a customer and that contract is contingent upon having cyber insurance or having a set, you know, coverage level of cyber insurance. Now, if a company does stuff or doesn't do stuff that either way leads to that coverage not being there, or in effect, if they are just doing things that would have invalidated the coverage in general. So some things you can do will diminish the coverage. Other things will just invalidate it and say, you don't have a policy at all. Either way, it's breach of contract. Now, I've checked with my lawyer friends and they're like, yep, that's breach of contract. So yet, here's the sad, sad thing I can tell you is my observation is that 98% of business decision makers in the SMB market don't care about that. And that's really sad. So I think that the thing that's going to move the needle on this in the SMB market is for the customers of those businesses to start asking for that documentation. You know, share with us, what are you doing to be, you know, compliant? What are you doing in your policies and procedures, your practices, your information security risk management program so that you can have effective coverage?
That sounds like a business we need to start.
Well, I call it correcting the issues on the demand side.
I love that because I think sometimes when I talk to consultants and these grimy companies make them sign contracts like in perpetuity, where they're then on a hook. When this the companies didn't do what they needed to do to make sure that their things are right, but because they have the resources, they'll go after the consultants. I just want to expose that whole thing. It's rotten. It's rotten to the core. It's rotten.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, there's some serious problems with justice, and I air quote that word, in this country.
Yes. Yeah.
We're gonna air quote that.
Because when do they... So, you know, if someone's been breached or attacked and things like that, and the insurance company says, oh, because you did A, B, and C, this contract is just a pretty piece of paper, then what? So the clients are impacted. All of the clients of the business are impacted. The customers, everybody's impacted and nobody's responsible. That's just, yeah, that shouldn't be that.
So let's, you know, we've talked about kind of an idea about a total IT spend thing. If somebody wants to think about it in terms of like a percentage of revenue, okay, fine. I gave my ideas on that. And then you added that actually they really need to be thinking about what they need to have in place in order to have that revenue stream continue. What are we doing to take care of our customers? Now, let's pivot to paradigm. In a lot of cases, the bad taste in the mouth that people have about IT services or consultants and stuff is all because they've come to the table with the wrong paradigm. Mm. So I'll start with like a really bad example, and then I'll go with a better example. A really bad example that should send somebody off some alarm bells is if they're giving you like a statement of work that says that we're going to patch your systems and we're going to patch your servers for $50 per server per month. And all we're going to do as part of that scope of work is we're going to verify that Windows updates are working.
Uh-oh.
Right. Uh-oh. Right. Okay. Right. So paradigm failure there, I find, is where the business decision maker has no idea what they're looking at. Mm-hmm. Okay. I look at that and I go, whoa, major problems. Your first instinct is, uh-oh, major problems, right? Okay. Business decision maker looks at that and says, well, this is only $6,000 a month. I can totally afford that. Okay.
But can you? The residual from that, yeah, you might end up losing your job over that one.
Well, the residual, I can tell you that was actually a real world example I put forth there. And the residual of that is that that company, by that process, by signing with that completely egregiously incompetent IT service provider, and I saw the SOW with my own eyes, so that's not up for debate what was in there, they basically invalidated their cybersecurity insurance policy. Okay. And because now they have no vulnerability management plan, which, by the way, invalidated the contracts that they had with their customers. So if the customers ever actually found out, then the customers can sue the provider for breach of contract. And, you know, it's you're done. You're done at that point. Right. Yeah.
But how did they think that was going to work? Even the company that set the statement of work forward, how did they think? I don't know.
Well, see, you're trying to apply logic and reason to something where people are trying to do back alley deals, as you had previously referred.
Now I'm wondering, are they getting in touch with the data owners? Are they making sure that they're testing those patches? Like, is there an outage window, a change process? Like, what's in this $50? Like, what's in this?
Well, it said right in the SOW, the only thing they were doing was monitoring Windows updates.
Wow.
So no third-party patches, no hardware, no business line apps, no updates to Active Directory. Because, you know, Active Directory actually has to be patched too. You have to, like, go get the new GPO template packs. You have to do continuous hardening on AD, you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, like, I've got like a 30-page vulnerability management program document that I've written.
Yeah.
And believe me when I tell you, it can't be done for $50 per server per month.
No, this is like, how are they? It's like they in the alley, like, hey, I got these gold watches.
Okay. All right. So I want to pivot to this question that I oftentimes get, which is, you know, when are we done with IT security investment? And my response to those folks is, hey, look, you're never done. The paradigm that I recommend is that we look at what needs to be done and we flat rate service contract everything that can be flat rate service contract. But you still have to come up with a dollar amount that you're going to say, is that $2,000? Is it $5,000? Is it $10,000? Is it $25,000? Whatever that dollar amount is every month, you are allocating that in your budget. And then you're going to have somebody in your company that is going to be your primary technical point of contact, who is going to work with your VCSO, who is going to every single month be working on making your information security risk management program better. Sometimes that's going to be remediation. Sometimes it's projects. Sometimes it's an assessment. Sometimes it's, you know, whatever it is, but that now the business has a consistent spend. They're expecting that spend to happen. So they've got budgetary management control. And the other thing that I've said to those executives who asked me that question, I say, look, you can stop at any time, right? Because you can just say, we're not going to do anything anymore.
Yes.
And we're just going to now accept all that risk and we're going to accept the consequences of that risk, you know? So they're basically every single month having the opportunity to pump the brakes and stop. But they need to realize, though, and you brought this up before with the whole technical debt issue, they need to realize that in that process, if they pump the brakes and they pause that for a year or whatever, it's really hard to pick that back up.
It is. It's hard to dig yourself out. It's hard. If you don't stay, I would say, at the pulse of change, the compounding debt is ridiculous, because it's like spaghetti. Where do you start? Like, what came first? The chicken, the egg, the little egg or the big egg? The big chicken or the little chicken? The blue chicken or red chicken? After a while, you're just like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. I want to go home. It just becomes a lot. Because digging through it, it just takes so much time, where if you just had that steady pulse, I think that's excellent. That's an excellent way to look at it, versus trying to dig through so many different things. The overlaying and compounding of issues, then what's going on with the business, especially if it's a thriving business or a business that's going after new markets or coming up with new products. You're mixing all that in with this obscene risk. Because I think one of the things we've done with putting this cybersecurity label is we made it seem like cybersecurity isn't a part of risk in general. So all we're talking about is risk. By making it seem like saying cyber, like it's some new thing, I think that's not really working out for us. We need to get it back into risk overall, because even though it may start off as cyber, the impact of it might not be cyber. The impact could be people.
Right.
The impact could be markets. The impact could be, who knows? So I think that...
Well, the impact is revenue.
Exactly. We need to pull that one back in.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I oftentimes have conversation with executives where I'm saying, look, you know, please do not think that you are supposedly never going to understand this stuff. Yeah. I call baloney on that, because you understand legal risk, you understand financial risk, tax risk, market risk, customer risk, you know, just simply the risk of having employees, right? I mean, you understand those risks. Information security risk is just another risk you have to manage. And yes, my job is to help you understand it and to prioritize it. But and that's all I really ask of them is, please just let me help you become an informed risk decision maker.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And have the right people at the table so that they can help individuals in leadership make the right decisions. You know, having a strong governance committee that's tapped in and turned on to what's going on. So, you know, hey, here's having to do with legal, here's something that's GDPR, here's this, and having that group kind of come together and figure out where are our priorities is priceless.
Well, and even in a smaller organization, I think something that's really effective that an executive team can do is they can kind of come up with the IT steering committee. So maybe here's their internal IT director. Maybe they've got another person on their IT team, or maybe they've got a business leader who's, you know, fairly tech savvy, and then they've got their VCISO. And, you know, one of the ways that an executive management team can be really sure that the right decision is being made is that those people agree.
Yes, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And one thing I've done before with smaller companies is to introduce them to individuals that they don't have on their team that are at larger organizations, to help me help them understand. So here's where your business is. You want your business to be over here. I'm getting this guy from this business that you want to be like that. He's trying to tell you your unmentionables are out on the lawn. It's not me. He's telling you your door is open. Everything's getting out. Got to do something about that. So then it's not like, you know, I'm, you know, being the party pooper. Where you want to go, the person where you, your vision is looking that way, they're telling you, in order for you to work with them, or in order for you to be like them, these are things that you have to figure out, you know, how you're going to make it work. And so I think it's really important to have that team, that listening team.
So we were talking before about the technical debt, and there's another key piece we didn't reveal. It's that if an organization doesn't have a continual Kaizen approach to just making their information security posture better on an ongoing basis, then they're finally like, well, now we got the budget. Now we're going to go spend the money. They might spend 6 months waiting for somebody to be available to help them.
Very true. I go through it all the time, like finding those key resources, especially if they're going after something like identity or some like obscure thing, because they have such complexity in their environment. Like, everything is not knee jerk. So I think they need to do a better job with other projects throughout the organization. It may make sense to have these, you know, long lead times and that, but when it comes to cyber, maybe that needs to be in a different structure, because the longer you wait, you know, the longer you wait, it's just a matter of time before something happens. It's the impact of those things based on that technical debt that can be devastating. So I always recommend where you can to have an alternate path for how cyber work gets done, because they can do it. But if they're having some type of Christmas party, they find the money. I'm just going to put that out there. So priorities.
So, you know, another observation I've had, and I'll see what you've experienced. But I've had organizations come to me and say, you know, we've got this cybersecurity insurance application, and we need to fill it out, right? And so, you know, there are certain things that they want to have remediated very quickly, which is always just, I mean, it's hallucinogenic, Okay. It can't get remediated in the time that they think it needs to get remediated. But the other huge observation I've had is that if I have an ongoing relationship with a client and we're working on something every month for them, my ability to crank out that cybersecurity risk assessment questionnaire response for them is pretty, you know, like I can get it done in a week or two, you know, versus, and it's a very high quality document that generally results in them getting either a low premium or even in some cases I've seen a lowered premium for our clients. So woohoo. But in the context that we don't have that ongoing relationship, I don't have any of the data, and there's not enough hours in the day available in my schedule to go get that data to be able to even produce the report.
So I don't understand this. You mean you can't just make it up? That's what they think. Just come up with some technical stuff and put it in there. And you're like, I'm not putting my name on this. Like, no. And I'm like, well, why not? I'm willing to pay you the money. It's like, it's not about that. It's about doing the right things right. I don't know where they get that from. It's like, you know, a lot of IT, just fill this thing out. And just like, I've never been, there's like 19 sites on here. What are you expecting from me? I don't know what you want from me, but I think they expect you to kind of just make it up. I can't. Like this document is like my words. Like I'm saying that this is what I saw and I have to do it right. You're absolutely right about
it. Well, so that's a whole nother interesting element. Like if I was going to have somebody fill that out for me or even assist me in that process, I would want that person to have the credentials to do that. And I would also want them to have the skin in the game that if they committed some sort of a malfeasance, there would be an implication to that and it would be an adverse impact to them, right? So I want them to basically have an incentive to not lie on that application. In contrast, what I see oftentimes is happening is somebody from the executive management team will receive this application that needs to be filled out. They give it to somebody in IT and they're like, hey, that's just the IT stuff. Let the IT department fill it out, right? Because they think in their mind that that is not risk that executives need to be managing. They think that's just an IT problem. And then I have yet, okay, and I'm not going to cast aspersions across to all IT people on the face of this planet. I am just simply saying I have yet to ever see a cyber insurance application that has been filled out by either a business owner or by their internal IT that was done accurately.
I agree. Yes. Yes, they won't admit it. Whoever's in IT is not going to say, yeah, we screwed up on this, so we're going to get a high premium, but I'm going to just be honest, that's not what they do. It's unfortunate.
Right. Right. And so then now the executive manager has to actually sign on that application. Now, if they signed on that application, and of course, it's their business, right? So they're the ones who are actually accepting the liability. Internal IT, they don't have any liability. And the probability that they're going to be getting fired because of lying on an application willfully, even after executive management finds out, is zero. They're not getting fired over that. I've never seen anybody get fired over that, ever.
Hmm. That's interesting. What are these people doing?
Well, look, you and I have both been in enough spaces for enough years to the point where I think we've seen a lot of companies make money in spite of themselves.
Yes. How are you still in business? Is this a front or the cartel? I don't know what you're doing.
Well, it might not be that bad, but okay. So let's pivot to kind of the final question here, which is how do we help these people know how to find the right kind of help? And I'll tell you, my ideas on it is I've been doing the Breakfast Bites podcast really since 2004 with the intent of trying to help people become more informed decision makers. Because I think that if you correct the issue on the demand side, right, where people who are procurement decision makers are not going to tolerate garbage service, right? Incomplete. It's cheap, right? But it's incomplete. if they know that $50 per month per server for air quote patching the server is horse hockey, okay, if that just immediately goes on their smell test is like, that is a horse hockey number. You cannot possibly be doing an appropriate job at that price point. Or you're using slave labor in some foreign country, which I don't really consent to having them have admin access to my system. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, okay, there is something that doesn't smell right about that. So I've been doing this in terms of like trying to address it on the demand side, make these people more informed decision makers so that when they see horse hockey, they can spot the horse hockey and they can demand better services. So what do you think is the solution to this?
I think that that's the solution. The reason I say that is a lot of risk professionals struggle with trying to do the right thing because they're also fighting businesses that don't know what the right thing is. They just know that they don't want to pay. But if they have been educated and recognized in order for me to get quality service, this is what it is, then it would make it easier for everyone. I think education is always the answer. Because when you know, if you just choose to ignore it, hey, that's a choice. But if you didn't know, so I do think that education is the way to go. I think that's very impressive to go for demand side. There's a term we got, you know, that you should come up with, but some type of demand side solution so people are educated about what they can expect, the level of quality they can expect. And not only about small business or risk, but even with their own data privacy. Like there are some things that they can definitely expect. And if you can't get that from your, whoever you're buying something from, like you can go someplace else with people who care about your data and care about where your data is going. Because every time I've worked with an organization that is either recovering from a breach or has been hit by a breach, it started with a beacon among the employees that the employees were getting breached first. So the data privacy, like it's a doorway. Once you get to the CFO, it's just one or two hops and you're in an organization. So, you know, those individuals are educated about their own data privacy, like where are your emails going when you bought this product, you know, and it was a sketchy website, all those types of things. It you know, I think education is the way to
go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had to recently have a conversation with some managers of a company to try to get them to be willing to alter some long-standing business processes about, inappropriate asking of employees for their logon passwords so that those could be put into an Excel spreadsheet on a server. And I asked the question, okay, how exactly do we hold people accountable for what's happening under their user account?
Exactly. Well,
in that context, you don't, right? So it's like all of this stuff is, you know, more often than not, I think it's not a technology solution. It's a people solution.
But it's not cyber awareness. Like that garbage, it's not that. Because I would rather pull my eyeballs out than go through like just general awareness training. The types of things we're talking about where, you know, here's the problem. This is where we want to be. There is a gap. I need those types. I need to be able to make mental connections. This click, click, and watching this cartoon do this thing. I just want to slit my wrist.
Well, for what it's worth, I think that both things are of supreme levels of importance because I don't personally want to be doing a weekly cybersecurity awareness training for, 7,000 people. You know, that's why we have tools that deliver that and it can gamify it and it can do scores. And you know, if you use the right system, there is really high engagement. And I have seen it improve people's awareness quite a bit. However, there is no digital substitute for what a CISO can do.
Yeah, because what I'm talking about is all the gamification, all that's fine. It's the scenario has to help them make a new mental connection so that they know when to bring that new learning forward. When do I do this? When? And so in what scenario? How should I change my behavior? Because awareness, everybody's aware of everything. But what triggers in your mind that you're going to change your behavior? I think that's critical. And I think often that's missing with just awareness.
I know the answer to that. And the answer to that, the question you just asked, the answer to that is that you value the security of the organization's information security risk management program. You value that and the quality of it and the company policies and the fact that the company needs to stay in business, you value that higher than your own convenience.
Yes. And I think that has to come from the top down. So like, I think all organizations, when they listen, their mission and their vision in there should talk about security, not only of their organization, but of the employees, because that's what we're trying to protect. We're trying to protect people.
Right.
I don't know why this is a sidecar. No. This is the key. Protecting that identity, because if you're not you, what does that mean? If you're some goddess in Tel Aviv, Barbados, Mexico, what does that mean? So we're trying to protect people, and I think they should bring that to the forefront. I think you're absolutely
right. Yeah, and your point about it being at the top, I mean, oh my goodness. This is, I think you just, it's just, that's right there. It's one of my hot buttons, right again. Because how it's, so one of my employees said this to me. One of my security engineers said this to me. He said, when the executive management team wants different rules for themselves than for the employees, it's like Congress creating all kinds of exemptions for themselves that they don't allow for us peons, us, you know, tax livestock.
Right, absolutely.
And then he says, and no wonder Congress's approval rating is 14%. You know, like what kind of leadership and loyalty does executive management inspire in the employee base when they're like, well, you know, we're going to have these restrictions for you guys, but you know, me, I'm the executive. I'm going to do whatever I want. You know,
it's okay that my executive assistant has all of the executive's passwords on a sticky note on her desk. Like, it's okay. Like this, we're doing top stuff up here. Top level stuff.
Yeah. Whereas like, I can tell you my attitude is, I recognize that I am a bigger target.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I feel that for me, it is a stakeholder management, stakeholder being my clients, myself and my family, my employees and their families, right? Our vendors that we buy from, right? You know, good stakeholder management is that I acknowledge that I'm a higher risk profile because I'm a public persona, you know, because I'm, you know, I own the company. I am a higher risk profile than my executive assistant. Okay. So I am willing to be more inconvenienced by having more technological restrictions on me. And that does mean that I end up having different containerized places where I do different things.
Right.
And the fun part is that I just recently had the conversation with another executive member at an organization where the verbatim words that this person said to me was that if it means I'm going to have two computers, that is too much inconvenience and I'm not going to do that. So that's what I'm saying. It's like something is simple and you know it's not expensive to have a second computer, nor is it expensive to, oh, when I need to do those super, super secret things, whatever, I'm going to remote into this other box to do that. Okay. That's not hard, nor is it expensive. Okay. But it has a huge positive impact in terms of risk reduction.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But here's this person telling me that they, you know, that's too much inconvenience. Just absolutely unwilling to even have a conversation to consider that that might be the best thing for risk management for the organization.
Right. Right. That's upsetting.
Well, you know, so as a CISO, it's not a lot you can do with that particular problem.
What are some things you can do, but nobody would like you after you did them? Well, I love the that if adversaries really wanted to have a lot of fun, they should just reach out to us because we know the idiots that should be attacked. Leave these people alone, but that one right there, have at it.
Yeah, yeah. Those people over there, they need a lesson right there. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. So
what other tips do you have for business decision makers that are trying to find the right help, whether it be VCISO help or like IT service provider, you know, IT projects, IT implementers, remediation, that sort of thing?
I would say above everything, you really want to find someone or even a group of people that aren't only about cybersecurity. Because cybersecurity is just one thing. You really want people who care about a holistic view of your organization and helping your company from a holistic standpoint. Or you're going to get people that keep throwing, you know, cybersecurity tools and products and things. And often that's not the answer. Sometimes that can make things easier, but for the amount of work and preparation and care and feeding to deal with that thing, if you're not willing to cut the light off when you're done at the end of the day, buying a device that dings to tell you to cut the light off probably isn't going to work either. You just put the hat on the hat, like cut it out. So I would just say find people who have a holistic view, even if you have to bring a group of people together to give you a full view of what's possible. And then, like you kind of mentioned, make sure it incorporates educating your staff so that they can care about your company too, because they're really the last line of defense.
Yes. Right.
You can buy all the things, check all the boxes, have all the vulnerability, man, like everything you want. If you have somebody sitting there that has no idea of what you're trying to do in terms of your risk strategy, it just gets real bad real fast.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, I mean, prime example of that is, you know, Bob receives a call. Bob gives the bad guy his password. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, here's the TeamViewer connection information. I don't know who you are, you know, but I'm gonna give it to you to my computer, you know.
He said it was from the help desk. What help desk? I don't know. It's like, are you-
And then you know, can you approve that push notification for me on your phone? Can you do that?
You only have to do it once. And I'm gonna send you a code. As soon as you do it, I'm gonna send a code to prove that I'm me. So when you hit the push and you never get the code, you're just glad that you're done talking with the guy. And just go on with your day. And it's just like, are you serious?
Oh, yeah, that's real.
Once I was with a group that someone from the board of directors sent an email alerting them that one of the servers had been hacked. And so they wanted to get the password so that they could log into the server. And so this email went out to like all the domain admins or whatever. So one of the domain admins responded like with the password to the server. And immediately the CISO responded with, are you effing kidding me? Because it wasn't from the board of directors. It was like some spoofed email. And I'm just looking at this like, this happened so fast. And they were, boom, adversaries in the server, like, oh my God. And just spread like wildfire throughout the organization. And I was just like, oh, in less than 10 minutes, it was bad.
Well, I mean, so where was the smell test that said, even if the board of directors is asking for them, for that password right after hell freezes over?
My first question, how am I on the email? You know, but this person was like, Danny 22. And I think some of that, so in the defense of not only employees in general, but people in cyber, there's just so much work and it's just so much stress and anxiety. We have to allow them to slow it down so they can pay attention.
Yeah. There's another aspect to that too, which is, and I've tried to counsel a lot of executive management on this, where it's like, you know, you guys are in authority. If when you respond to something, you're responding overly just because you're in authority, what you say is already being delivered with authority and forcefulness, right? That's already there. You don't need to get any louder. Okay. Right. So if what happens is somebody comes to you and they're trying to make you aware of a major deficiency, like, oh yeah, you know that HVAC system that we have? Yeah, that's right. It's open to the Chinese hackers. Maybe we should do something about that, you know. But then you have like the facilities director that's like, I don't want to hear about that. And then they get all emotional about it. They go to the executive team and the executive team doesn't like conflict. So then they go back to IT and say, don't talk to the facilities director about that. Okay, wrong response. Yeah. Wrong. Okay. Yeah. Now, what they should have done is, you know, 1-800-FELICIA.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, how can we handle this problem? And I would have said, well, let's define who the resource owner is. Okay. Because the resource owner is the person who gets to define who is actually authorized to have legitimate access to this resource.
Exactly.
And get them to make that decision, because having the HVAC system open to the entire world free willy, that is not a legally defensible option. We can't do that. And it is literally, you're defeating your entire position of being a risk decision maker by saying that that person's emotions is more important than the survival of the company.
Exactly.
Okay. And so what I find way too frequently is where executives themselves don't want to slow down. They need to stop and take the time and say, okay, I have somebody telling me here that there's a problem. Rather than telling the person who's trying to fix the problem to go away, that they're making this other person emotional. No, I now, as the leader, I have to pull all them in a room together and say, no, you guys are going to sit down. You're going to talk about this. Okay. And if we have to get a mediator, we're going to get a mediator, right? But somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody is going to be hurt. And sometimes that means that the executive manager has to go be the one who's doing the hearing. So they have to make the time in their schedule to go hear it. But I find 99% of the time, that's not what's happening. And so IT people who try to fix, they just get this campaign thrown back at them over a period of time where it's like, it's going to be, no, that's going to hurt somebody's feelings. No, we don't want to inconvenience that person. Or, you know, whatever the uninformed decision is that's being made. And it's really, it's a decision about making the human emotional problem go away. It's not a risk management decision that they're making.
Exactly. Yep. What they've done is given the ability for the leadership individual or group or whatever, given the ability for them to make the decision to that guy. And is that what you really want to do? Like, do you really want to put everything about your company with the HVAC guy? He could be amazing. He could be smart. He could be all these things. But if you don't listen to it for yourself, that's really what you're doing. And it seems obscene.
Well, and in that example, the only thing that would have ever been required is this. Do you lock the door to the HVAC room? You do? Well, then we need to lock the door to the HVAC to the internet.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, it's not different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So a lot of the risk challenges that we're talking about, they just see it as one more thing when it's not. It's part of the fabric. It's part of the tapestry. And it's not if you do. It's not like if you have 10 things and you do 7, that's good enough. It's you do as much as you can do because it's never good enough.
Right.
And I think they look at it the other way. Like, we've done enough. Like, we can. Okay, we're done. Like, it's just a couple of things. It's like, no. Whatever's available is going to be used. So you keep working at it. You keep working at it. So,
well, and there's a new thing tomorrow.
Absolutely. Out of nowhere.
Right. So if you don't stay on top of it, your list of things you need to fix just keeps getting longer and longer and longer. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the fancy tools. You know, I did a webinar on the cyber maturity defense model a month or so ago. And one of the things that I talked about in there is that I really would like people to stop spending money on shiny objects when they haven't actually fully utilized what they've already got.
Or if they don't know what they have. It's like,
well,
you don't
need. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was basically what you were saying there. It's like, you know, so many of the problems that an organization has can be fixed with policies, processes, and people. And it doesn't always mean new fancy technical controls.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. I would say at least, 60 to 70% of what you have to do. If you know everything you have and you know where it is and you really know who's using it, like you have identity down, you are in a really good spot. Now is what you were talking about, is that constant pulse of the new things that are going to pop up, that constant pulse of looking at vulnerabilities, that constant pulse of, planning for the future. And what do we buy? Is that still good? What's the end strategy of that? So once you get that, you know what identity looks like in your organization. Often organizations haven't even defined identity, what it means to have an identity in an organization. But once you get that down and you know what your assets are, because data is an asset, people are an asset, you've gone a long way. And there's a lot of work there that people aren't doing. They're just buying the new shiny thing.
On the identity front, one of the things that has always just rankled me was this question on the cybersecurity insurance applications where it says, do you have MFA? And it's like some sort of, generic, ridiculous question like that. And the question I ask is, do you even know what all systems people are logging into? Because if you don't have an inventory of that, you certainly can't go and find out whether or not MFA is enabled there. And I can tell you that I continue to run into situations where I'm trying to work with somebody to get them off of some sort of massively horrible legacy technical debt, some junk running on a 2003 server. I mean, super bad, right? And the new thing is a SaaS application. And then you look at the SaaS application and it doesn't have MFA.
Oh, no.
First person that ever even said to the software company, so what are you going to do MFA on this, right?
Right. It's heartbreaking because, I don't know.
Software is like a swear word for me.
Oh my goodness, so many things come into play. So absolutely.
Like my switches, my network equipment, I love these things. They do what you expect them to do. But software, no, it's a swear word.
We just throw things in a bag and shake it up. Whatever you get is what you get.
Well, but, back to the whole SaaS thing, like what is the third-party information risk management vetting process for a new SaaS application? I mean, I would think it would need to be in the contract with the SaaS vendor that you will have multi-factor authentication. And you have to have a global enforcement option too, which is that like this shouldn't be like thing you have to turn on individually for every user. No, enforce. And there's got to have, you have to have a way to be able to have an automated report generated from that system, like on a weekly basis, so you can audit it. You've got to have the stinking audit process. But it's like, I continue to encounter these SaaS platforms that don't have the most basic functionality and requirements in there. Huge database SaaS vendors who don't have any methods in there for like data retention. We set a data retention policy of we don't need anything older than 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, where's the process by which we can just, run this once a year and it scrubs out the old data and we do something with it, or we inspect the old data or whatever. Another one totally floors me. See if you've run into this one. So you got a company who needs to have a way to know the quantity and type of records that may be reportable in a breach. But then the SaaS platform has no mechanism whereby you can regularly, with an automation, get those statistics. So, your reporting thresholds is like, in some states for certain types of data, it's more than 25,000 records. Sometimes it's more than, 200,000 records of whatever, right? So whatever that threshold is, ultimately at the end of the day, you have to have a way to know what was the quantity and type of those records that we think potentially could have been breached. And if the expectation is that I'm going to be able to do that scan after the system's been breached? Well, the reality is the system may be ransomware and it's offline. You can't get that data anymore. So what do you think?
I agree, because there was one application situation where in the documentation, they said they didn't collect any protected information. However, one of the vendors that we needed to engage with, I think may have been either in healthcare or something. The organization was not, the SaaS product was not, but because we started interacting with the healthcare organization, there was a type of data that then became protected. This software company could not figure out their, you know what, from their elbow to help us quantify what we were looking at in terms of the amount of risk and the processes we would then have to structure for that particular vendor that we started working with. It was ridiculous. And so do you rip it out? Because you have other providers in there too. You have other services in there too. Like, what do you do? And so I think you're absolutely right about that. Often, I think these SaaS application companies, they're going after a certain target audience and security is not on the list because they want to get it out cheap, fast, and in a hurry.
Yeah, it's called minimum viable product, except their definition of minimum viable product and mine are this far apart.
Even the terms they use sometimes, I don't understand. This one company, just how they use the term product, I was just like, that is a very colorful way to use the term. That is not a product. Like, I don't know where you get them, but this is not. So yeah. Well, I think they do whatever they can.
So, you know, how do we fix this problem? And to me, the only way that I've seen that it really, really gets fixed is if everybody in the company that has procurement authority is going to pump the brakes and say, we will not adopt any technology and we will not sign a contract to acquire technology unless our CISO has signed off on it. And then you have, you know, a tapizarum process basically. And do you have MFA? Do you have a way for us to generate these reports? You know, whatever it is, right? CISO's got to look at that stuff and specify those things. And then that CRUD has got to be in the danged contract. It's got to be in the contract. Then you sign it.
How many times I'm having like a little tiff with a lawyer because they don't understand the implications of what they're about to sign. And I feel bad for them because they're looking at, is there some exposure here for my client? And it's like, no, that's the wrong question. Can your client absorb the risk? That should be the question. And so it's like, yes. So, you know, let me give you an example. We install this application. It does this, this, and this, blah, blah, blah. But let's look at the life cycle of that system in your organization. Often attorneys don't look at that. Not just when you bought it, if there's risk there. Let's look at the end-to-end strategy of this thing and all the different points of risk. You got to look at the whole thing because I want the contract to specify at each and every point who's responsible. What do we need to come forward with? At what timeline? Like, I need to know those things because as I implement this, I don't want to be on the hook for doing the big bad thing. Like, we need to square this away up front. And they're like, oh, well, in general, no, don't general, because when we have a cyber attack, it's not going to be general. Let's be specific. So usually I have to take the whole document, dump it in Excel, have a whole, what do you call it? Governance committee or IT steering or whatever it is. Everybody needs to look at this. Who's responsible? Who's accountable? Who's going to execute on this thing? At what frequency? When are we going to check it? How much does it cost? Who needs to be involved? What does the vendor need? And as a result of all these things, is this that you're looking at in the contract adequate? I could take a contract that's 7 pages and turn it to 39 like that. Just when everybody takes a look, like, take a look. Your department's about to get hit with this thing. When you read this paragraph, is this what you expect when you look at this? And they're like, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? What about this? You have to do it. You have to do it.
Right. Because you can't clean up that mess after the fact.
It's too late. So often those software packages, hard for them to get in the door. And that's how it should be. Because once they get in, they run rampant. And then if it's difficult to manage them, then IT, and I'm not going to say all IT groups, but often it gets on the back page and it never gets touched. And now you have this vulnerable system in your organization. Yeah. And nobody's managing.
Well, so I got another example for you to kind of contrast the necessity of a vCISO versus just relying exclusively on internal IT. So I encountered a situation where internal IT is sitting there for like 16 years with this server and this legacy system and stuff. And it's this super mega business critical thing. And internal IT does nothing with this system. I mean, yeah, they maintain it, they back it up, you know, but really you can't have any endpoint protection on it anymore because it's too old. It's, you know, massive amounts of technical debt. It's got massive amounts of software vulnerabilities. You can't really secure it. You know, I mean, it's just, it's a cluster, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I go and I look at it and I talk to the data owner and I just understand what is in this system. And they're like, oh, well, it's this type of data. And I'm like, well, why don't we just do this with it? And it just like instantaneously, it did take me but 5 seconds to come up with a solution to leverage an existing technology that the company had that could have taken all the data that they cared about and put it in a fully supported modern platform that's secured. Okay. So I think that's something else that's really key, pivotal, that a CISO who knows, like, you know, business processes can do, is they can look at these things that IT just doesn't make that time to look at and to deal with.
Yeah, they were told no, and they just leave it like that. Or even just to have a plan, like plan in place. If this machine should go down, what would that look like? Once I have that plan, okay, if we had to execute this today, where would that money come from? Okay, you get that answer. So can we get started? Why would we sit here? We've done this thing. We're all looking at the same thing. Shouldn't we get started? Because we've looked at, it's taken us like 2, 4, 6 weeks to come up with this plan of what we would do if this would go down. Why would we wait? Can we start? And they're just like, well, I guess we can do a little of this, a little. It's like, but it's been sitting here for 7 years.
Right.
With everything. And we'll get to it right at some point. It's like, no, right, the point is today. So
right. Well, that's also part of the push-pull that also oftentimes happen with most of internal IT is getting slaughtered with support tickets. And when support tickets are their primary function, that's all that they're paying attention to.
Yes.
You know, and they don't really, I'm not, you know, and again, I'm not denigrating internal IT. It's just, you've got competing priorities. What is your, you know, and this is exactly the same reason why a lot of times they're not patching things effectively or they're not doing proactive management effectively. And it's because if they have to do support tickets, whose primary responsibility is it to actually maintain the security posture of the systems?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And that's a good point where a VCSO could come in, because, you know, if I walk into an environment, and it happens a lot, where I'm seeing like, you know, 10,000 support tickets, the very first thing I want to do is let's strategize and bundle these things and figure out this 10% of these tickets. How can we fix this forever? What is this thing? Because I'm tired of seeing this same type of ticket. Like, we need to fix it. This is a problem in the organization, and figure out how to make that kind of projectize up. Instead of us just throwing spitballs at it, let's resolve it.
Right.
Is it education? Is it a different system? Like, what is the thing? Is it something that we're not understanding? Like, what's going on that all these tickets are coming through, and try to figure that part out. So I think when everybody's coming in just pressing their key, nobody looks up to say, if we take a holistic view of this thing, how can we improve the environment?
So you just made me think of something else that I've observed is crucially valuable, is the slowing down. Let's pump the brakes. Let's make some time for these strategic planning meetings. Right. So I love to go and meet with managers of business units and find out, you know, what do you need? What are you grumpy about? You know, what's your business processes? How are you doing this? How are you doing that? Right. And then why do you do it that way? And Yes. And they've got to make the time for those meetings. And oftentimes, if I'm doing a training session, I'll just start asking them questions and things. And then, you know, you go down the rabbit hole of like, oh, well, I had no idea. Right. And I found, you know, $250,000 worth of savings in a meeting, just because I get to know that this is the way that they've always done it. And everybody else who was ever involved in that particular business unit or that process, it's like, well, you know, they're paid to come to work every day to do that job, to do that process.
Yes.
Right. And so that's their managers tell them, this is how you do it, versus me. I look at it and I'm like, we have a better way to do it. Can we please just have a discussion about the better way to do it?
Well, let me show you this one thing. Instead of you spending 45 minutes to do this, there's a box here that you can click and it'll do that for you. Like, you can keep doing that. It's up to you. I'm just telling you this. Wow. Right. That's great. That's great.
Oh, you're cute when you do that.
Because I don't want people to feel offended. Like, you don't have to do it. You can overwork if you want. You can put an extra 4 hours in your day. It's totally up to you. I'm just saying that you may want to.
you may want to do it more easy. You know,
some people like hard things. I get it, but just
oh yeah, oh yeah. People do like hard things. Like, you know, like, hey, let's print out this stuff. Have somebody fill out the paper copy, then we'll scan it back into the system, then we'll send it over to this office, then they print it again, and then the people at that other office, they put it into the computer system. I mean, like, I'm not even kidding you, this was a thing, and my head like almost left my shoulders, you know?
If I have to do a manual process more than a couple times, I'm immediately thinking, how can I automate this? There's got to be a way. This can't be how this goes. I can't do this. It's got to be a better way. Yeah.
Okay, well, good times. Do you have any parting words for us?
I could talk to you for hours. We should do something else. Like, this is great. That's it.
Oh, I think we've already picked out a topic for the next podcast.
Okay, what are we doing?
I will bring you up to speed on that later. But for now, thank you so much for being on the Breakfast Bites podcast. The InfoSec rabbits approve.
I can envision them all sitting around like this long table.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's the Knights of the Round Table.
Yes. That's fantastic. That's great.